class, we talked about three great black band leaders of Harlem. But they're really four. But if you've been listening to Chick Webb or Fletcher Henderson or even Benny Goodman, you might not recognize that Duke Ellington is playing in the same style. The difference between them and even this early Ellington cut we've been listening to are monumental. This is Hophead, a Duke Ellington recording from the 1920s. And frankly, if this is all Ellington had ever done, you might not have noticed. It's fairly ordinary. Like the other recordings we've been listening to, this music was performed for live dancers. But in 1927, Duke Ellington began to perform at the Cotton Club. The Cotton Club had a floor show, so a white audience would sit and watch a dance show with the Ellington Band performing music like this. Holy mackerel. Does that make you feel like getting up out of your chair and dancing along? It's a whole different sound world. The first thing you notice is Bubber Miley playing the growl trumpet. Now, you probably thought when you took this course, well, I'll never be able to tell different trumpet players apart. But if you've been listening to Louis Armstrong, or even some of the other swing trumpet players, like Harry James, hear what a really different way to play the trumpet this growl and plunger sound is. Bubber Miley on the trumpet. But if you can hear what a different sound world this is, you already understand the two most important things about Duke Ellington. The first is that he was creating a different kind of music for a different purpose. Art music for listening rather than participating in dancing. This is something a little different in jazz. And second, the individual sounds of soloists and players is really, really important. They're not interchangeable. That growl sound is really important to Duke Ellington's band. And so when Bubber Miley leaves the band, he has to find somebody else who can play the trumpet in the same way. And so he hires Cootie Williams, who learns the same growl trumpet. Now, this piece probably doesn't make you want to get up and dance either, but it's not supposed to. Both of these pieces are in what's often called Ellington's jungle style. Now, why would a serious African-American composer write in a jungle style? Well, think about the name The Cotton Club. The Cotton Club had a plantation theme. White audiences were coming to Harlem to slum. They wanted something a little dangerous and exotic. And so Ellington played jungle style just to titillate and excite his white audience. This is another jungle style piece called Coco from 1940. Listen to Juan Tizol playing the trombone. Now, as the music shifts, another trombonist, Tricky Sam Manton, takes over. Now, as you can probably hear, these two guys play the same instrument, but in very different ways. Remember, that's typical for jazz, where the individual style is important and not reproducing some classical sound. So if you go back again and listen to Juan Tizol, you hear he plays the trombone in a fairly classical manner. Juan Tizol is, in fact, Puerto Rican, but he plays it in an Italian sort of band tradition. He's actually playing a valve trombone. But listen to his beautiful classical. Compare that to Tricky Sam Manton, who has effectively transferred the growl trumpet sound to the trombone. So think about this for a minute. Glenn Miller chose his band members like most band leaders. If you want a trombone section, you want all three of them to sound alike. You want to have the Glenn Miller trombone section sound. And so you've got three guys who kind of play in the same style. Duke Ellington does exactly the opposite. He takes three guys who each play the trombone in remarkably different ways and puts them together in the same section. Because ultimately, Ellington composes by using the individual tones of the members in the orchestra. This is often referred to as the Ellington effect. It's a term coined by Billy Strayhorn, and here's what he said it meant. Quote, Ellington plays the piano, but his real instrument is the band. Each member of his band is to him a distinctive tone color and set of emotions, which he mixes with others equally distinctive to produce a third thing, which I call the Ellington effect. Sometimes this mixing happens on paper, frequently right on the bandstand. I've often seen him exchange parts in the middle of a piece because the man and the part weren't of the same character. Ellington's concern is with the individual musician and what happens when they put their musical characters together. Billy Strayhorn. So for most of the band leaders we've discussed, you only have to know one or two soloists. Sometimes that was all the band had. They had one or two good soloists. In Count Basie, he had lots of them, but I'm only making you know Lester Young. For Fletcher Henderson, you have to know Coleman Hawkins. But for Ellington, the sound of the soloists is the sound of the band. And as the players in the band change, we relabel the band eras to go along with the players. There are some early recruits who were with Ellington forever, like Sonny Greer and Johnny Hodges, Harry Carney. So the Cotton Club Orchestra has a mixture of soloists, like in the sax section, Barney Bigard, Johnny Hodges, Harry Carney, three really very different types of players. Then he adds Ben Webster and Jimmy Blanton, and we call it the Blanton-Webster Band of the 1939 and 1940s. Partly because those two soloists, Ben Webster and Jimmy Blanton, changed the character of the band. He only needed four saxophones. He'd been carrying four saxes for a long time, but Ben Webster was so good and such a different kind of sound that he said, okay, I'll have five saxes. I'll change the number of players in the band. For Jimmy Blanton on bass, he now had a soloist on the bass, a new type of bass player, so he wrote new types of pieces. So we call this the Blanton-Webster Band. So for Ellington, you do have to know a few more names. You don't have to remember every single soloist on the list on page 91 in your course notes, but you have to have some sense of some of the really important ones, like Sonny Greer on drums and like Johnny Hodges on alto. This again is a really different way of playing the saxophone. This time it's an alto sax. You'll often hear Johnny Hodges playing these ballads, slow pieces. He plays with this great vibrato and he swoops up to the high notes. It's a very different kind of sound and you just have to learn this sound. It's Johnny Hodges playing the alto. So that's a brief introduction to Duke Ellington and his music. So while I don't expect you to be able to tell Chick Webb from Fletcher Henderson right away, I do expect you to be able to tell Duke Ellington from the rest, especially the jungle style, darker, more exotic sounding. This piece is called Mood Indigo, and so this style is sometimes called mood style as opposed to the jungle style. But here again, unusual textures, exotic sounds, and a unique sound of the soloists. The best news is Duke Ellington survives the demise of the big band era, and we get to talk about Duke Ellington again in the 1950s. Enjoy.